Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of Cavalytics, a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. We're available on both SoundCloud and iTunes, but you obviously already know that since you are listening to us right now. We've been getting a little bit of a surge in listeners lately, but we'd love it if you guys could continue to spread the word about us or give us likes or good ratings on iTunes or SoundCloud. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. I've said this before, but we read everything we receive at both those places, and we try to respond to everything. My co-host Arnav is here. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going really well. We had a great game today.
Yes, the Cavs just won by 29 on the road against Milwaukee.
Yeah, it was an excellent game. I think this was probably one of our most complete games. Would you say so?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but yeah. I mean, look, winning by 30 on the road is always good, but there isn't really anything... I'm going to pick some nits, of course, but there's nothing that's like really frustrating about today's game.
Yeah, I think the turnovers maybe were a little too high, 16 turnovers, but
yeah.
Again, like you said, it's nitpicking. It's not really a major concern when you shoot 50% from three.
Yeah, the Cavs went 18 of 36 from three, including 7 for 11 for J.R. Smith, who had 7 threes in the first half, actually.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, he had maybe a couple of shots in the second half, and that was about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he played in the fourth quarter. LeBron, Love, and Irving, none of them played in the fourth quarter.
None of them played in the fourth quarter.
Okay, yeah. Which is good because the Cavs play tomorrow against... The Pacers, right. In Indianapolis, I think.
Yes, it's in Indianapolis.
So, and if the Cavs win tomorrow, they clinch home court advantage throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Actually, I think they need another loss from the Raptors.
Let's see. The Raptors have 25
losses. Because they have the tiebreaker.
You're right. So the Cavs' magic number is 2. So any combination of wins or Toronto Raptors losses and the Cavs will clinch. And the Raptors won tonight, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
They blew out. Well, actually, they barely eked out a win against the Hornets.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Yeah, I mean, look, we have 4 games left, and the Raptors have 5 games left, so I think we're in okay shape here.
Yeah, we'll be fine. I think we'll get home.
Yeah, we only need to go 2 out of 10 or 2 out of 9 in those 9 games, and I think that'll happen. Let's see, a couple other things about tonight. LeBron was 7 of 9. I think he started 7 of 7, is that right? Or 6 of 6, anyway.
He was 6 of 6, or yeah. 5 of 5, something like that.
He's still not jump shooting basically at all. He missed a 3. And
he had 3 jump shots today. He had a missed 3, a made 3, and then a made mid-ranger, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. He did have 4 turnovers, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, 17 points in just 28 minutes. Not bad. He was guarding Giannis Antetokounmpo, who almost had a triple-double, 22 points, 14 rebounds, 8 assists, only 3 turnovers, and he was 10 of 18. So LeBron's defense on Giannis wasn't super awesome, but, I mean, look, LeBron wasn't guarding him the whole time, and this game was sort of odd in that, you know, it was sort of on cruise control after halftime.
Yeah, I think they started off so hot that it didn't really matter what they did after halftime.
Right. Looking if there's anything else that's worth picking apart here. Kyrie was 5 of 9.
He was 3 of 4 from 3.
He was plus 16. And I actually don't know who he's... Was he guarding Rashad Vaughn on defense?
I don't remember, honestly.
Must have been, because... So the Bucks have this weird starting lineup. So they have Monroe at center, obviously, and then they have Jabari Parker, who is ostensibly their power forward, but then they have Antetokounmpo, who's 6'10", with, like, you know, a 20-foot wingspan, who plays point guard. And then the last two are Johnny O'Brien and Rashad Vaughn, so...
It must be with Vaughn, because he's their other guard.
Yeah, he's their other short guy. Rashad Vaughn was 4 of 17.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I don't think it correlates 1-to-1, but yeah. Either.
Oh, you don't think Kyrie has suddenly become super awesome on defense in one game?
Yeah, I don't think he's suddenly turned into Tony Allen. But
yeah, seems improbable, but anyway, positive sign. And
yeah.
Yeah. Just.
I think the best thing for him was the 3-point range shooting today. three of four from three. Love was three of six. LeBron was one of two. J.R. Smith, 7 of 11. Channing Frye, 2 of 6. And James Jones, 2 of 4.
Yeah, his last three put the Cavs up 29. I always get sort of annoyed when the Cavs get into sort of end of the bench mode at the end of games and say they're leading by 30 and then the other team whittles it down to 20 because I know that affects our SRS and I like seeing our SRS high so that I feel better about our chances against the beasts in the West.
Yeah, I mean, the Spurs, that's how they maintain their high SRS, right? Their bench actually doesn't lose leads.
Yeah, and it sort of means I try not to think about this too much, but it sort of means that the Warriors' SRS is actually understated because the end of their bench is not very good.
Yeah, once the rotation's shortened, I think they're.
When does NBA Reference update their SRSs? They update it nightly, not sort of all the time,
Basketball
right?
Reference.
Sorry, Basketball Reference.
It's overnight, yeah, so I don't, we won't see it till
Yeah,
tomorrow.
so the Cavs are 5.48 now. I'm guessing tomorrow they'll be like 5.7.
Yeah, I think 0.24 sounds about right.
Let me just
Because
plug
if
it.
it's like, was it that, I think they lose their games by 4 usually. So it's a 25 divided by 80. Yeah, 0.3. Yeah, so 5.7, I would say.
That
And then they were
actually
away, so that should help. So yeah, 5.7 something.
A 0.2 difference in SRS. I'm geeking out here, but and I'll explain this in a moment for the listeners, but I've created a model that gives series win percentages based on SRS difference. And by raising our SRS by 0.2, it increases our chance of winning a series against the Spurs or Warriors by 1%. It's like 1.01% increase.
Yeah, I mean, the current chances are what, 10%, you said? So
Let's
that's
see here.
10%
So
increase.
it's like 4 point. I'm guesstimating what our SRS is, the SRS difference is going to be, but what I'm using for the sake of this is 4.66. And in that case, the Warriors would have a 86.8% chance of winning. So we would have a 13.2% chance of winning that series.
So about an 8% increase, which would be 1%, right? Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I think if the Cavs win their next four games by 20 something each, that would help our overall SRS.
Yes, it would. It would, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Do you think so? How do you think the Cavs are going to play the last week here? So there are four games left. They have the Pacers tomorrow night, so that'll be the second of a back-to-back. But as we said, none of the big three, none of the starters really played extended minutes tonight. And then they have the Bulls on Saturday night in the primetime game on ABC, so they get 2 days off before that. And then on Monday they play the Hawks in Cleveland. And then I'm actually not sure if their final game against the Pistons is here or if it's on the road. Do you know by any chance?
Yeah, it's gonna
It
be
it's
at
at home.
home.
It's at
It's
home.
at home.
Okay, so they have at Pacers, at Bulls, home versus Hawks, home versus Pistons. So four games left. I think everyone's going to play tomorrow because the Cavs have 2 days off after that, and the starters didn't play big minutes tonight.
I guess it depends if they care about the Bulls getting into the playoffs or not. I don't think they care because I think the Bulls are looking terrible right now. They just lost to Memphis today. And they've just been reeling terribly.
Yeah, there was a time when I think you and I disagreed a little bit on whether facing the Bulls would be good or bad. How do you feel about the Bulls now?
Yeah, I've switched completely now.
Okay.
I think I would love to face the Bulls.
Yeah, they're sort of a dysfunctional bunch. But okay, so well, I
So I
mean,
think Cavs will play tomorrow.
yeah,
Yeah.
I do too. And then what about at Bulls on Saturday?
They probably play at Bulls and then I think they'll sit the home games there. The big three will sit the last two home games.
If they gave someone time off against the Bulls, then they could go home after the game in Indiana. Although, you know what? They're probably going to want to practice in between the Pacers game and the Bulls game because they have 2 off days. I wonder if they'll go home to Cleveland in the meantime there, or if they'll just go to Chicago early.
How far is Chicago from Indiana?
It's close. It's probably a bus ride, not a flight.
Yeah, I think we'll just go straight there.
Yeah.
Even Cleveland's not that far from there, so.
Yeah, so I think that's probably right. I think LeBron will probably rest the last two games. I never have any idea what they're doing with Irving and Love. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, they rested. So last year, what happened? They rested the Celtics games because they wanted the Celtics to get in the playoffs, and that happened. And they rested the last game against the Wizards, if I remember correctly. That was the Brendan Haywood game-winning shot. I don't know if you
Oh,
watched that game or not, but
no, it wasn't Brendan Haywood. It was Sean Marion,
no, it was
wasn't it?
Brendan Haywood. I still remember the jumper specifically on the last play. We can look this up again, but I
Wasn't
remember.
there a game where, like, wasn't one of the final games of the year last year, Sean Marion had like a dunk right at the end
Yes,
of.
and then everyone jumped on him.
Yeah.
It was his last. That was the last play of the game. By that time, they were.
I see.
But the
I see. I
game-winning
see. I
shot
see.
was actually
Brendan
Brendan Haywood.
Haywood. Oh, good for him.
It was a
Okay.
fun game, actually. I actually had a lot of fun watching that one.
Yeah. Are you ready for the playoffs? Like, I know for me it means that
It's a lot of time
yeah.
investment,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm on the West Coast, so I have to like make arrangements so I can, leave work or, get home before the game starts, and the games normally start at 4 or 4:30 here, so drives my boss crazy. And then yeah, I refuse to watch playoff games on tape delay because
Because if you go on Twitter, you're going to be spoiled.
yeah, well, and also, like, almost every single person who knows me, like, emails me, tweets me, sends me text messages, calls me.
Yeah.
And I start making up things in my mind. Like, if I'm not getting text messages, I'm like, oh, what does that mean? And anyway, I just drive myself insane. So I have to watch the games live just to do that. And then, yeah, I mean, it's such a. I get sort of really worked up, before, during, and after the games. Like, it's sort of a stressful 2 months. But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Who, so if we end up playing, who do you want to play, Pacers or Pistons?
I'm indifferent. I'm completely indifferent. I guess. I mean, look, gun to my head. I think the Pistons. Yeah, the Pistons. Just
Yeah, I just think it's
because.
going to be so easy with the Drummond and the Hacker-Drummond strategy.
Right.
Pretty much anytime you're down or even close, you can just hack because he shoots what 36%. That's 0.72 points per possession. Teams on average have what 1 point per possession.
Yep. Yeah, we've talked about that before. Like,
Yeah.
I think we will steamroll either of those two teams. I hope we steamroll them. So that would be good. I did want to talk a little bit about this SRS model I've been working on. So this guy named Justin Kubatko did some work in 2013 to figure out what the chance of a team winning a home game was based on the SRS difference between the two teams. So, you want to remind people what SRS is, real quick, Arnav?
Yeah, it stands for Simple Rating System, and basically what it does is it looks at your net differential, your average net differential over the course of the season, and then it
What's
adjusts
a
for the.
what's net differential?
Yeah, it's just how many you outscore your opponents by per 100 possessions.
Right.
So it just looks at that average over the course of the season and then adjusts for your opponents. So whatever their net differential is for
Yeah,
against other
so
teams.
instead of it just being your average net differential, which is a pretty good stat, in fact, that stat, the average number of points you outscore your opponents by, is a better stat than wins and losses at predicting future wins and losses, which is sort of interesting. But the difference between SRS and net differential is that it is scaled by the quality of your opponent. So if you play the 76ers 70 times, your SRS will be lower than your net rating, and if you played the Spurs, every game, your SRS would be higher. So hopefully that makes sense. So, anyways, this guy Justin Kubatko made a model to try to figure out what the chance of winning a home game was based on SRS differences, and he actually had like a fairly sophisticated analysis, and he looked at, I think. The last he did the work in 2013, but I think he looked at all regular season games from the 1976-77 season through the 2012-2013 season. And he basically came up with an equation that gives the win probability. I'm not going to go into the math on that. It's pretty the formula is a little bit complicated, but I will link to his study in the podcast comments or the podcast description if people would like to take a look. But in any case, it turns out that if teams have an SRS difference of zero, so if they're you know sort of effectively the exact same quality team, the home team has a well. What do you think it is, Arnav? What do you think the probability of two equally matched teams playing? What do you think the home team's win probability is?
66%.
Wow, I feel like you know this. It's 64.8%.
I just guessed it.
Yeah. So home court advantage is a big deal in the NBA, and we can speculate on reasons why. In fact, yeah, let's speculate on reasons why. So it's probably because the players are more comfortable being at home for whatever reason. So the home crowd obviously helps. They probably get better sleep. So on average, if you're at home, you know, you're sleeping in your own bed. I don't know, maybe you're used to the lights and the way the light illuminates the backboard. I don't know. What else? You have anything else, Arnav?
Yeah, I just think most players tend to shoot better at home.
Yeah.
I think that's not every player. I think Steph actually shoots better away from Oracle Arena, but I think most players tend to shoot better at home. And then other things like, yeah, the crowd mostly, I think that's the biggest difference. And then I guess the sleep too. So if you have to travel the day before or 2 days before the game, and then you only get 1 day off for practice.
So yeah, I think those things are all true. I think also you probably have you have access to like your training staff. You know, some people who don't travel with the team. Also, you're just, you know, a routine that you do for 41 home games a year is more, you know, probably get you more comfortable than something you do once or twice a year for, you know, for each different away city that you play at. So in any case, look, everyone knows that home court advantage matters, but yeah, I thought it was pretty profound. It's a 15%, or, you know, really you can argue a 30% benefit.
And that's determined historically, right? Just by
yes,
looking at...
Yes. Yeah. He went, from 76, 77 on. Okay, so so his model basically gives you the chance for a home win, and you can basically invert that to get the chance of a home loss, and then you can do some machinations to get road win probability and road loss probability. What I did was I looked at the various ways that a 7-game series could unfold. So, you know, one way it can unfold is you could win the first 4 games. And if you're at home, that means the first 2 games are at home and the second 2 games are on the road. And what I did was I took all the different ways you can win a series. So you could win 4, you could lose the first game, then win 4. You could win 1, lose 1, win, lose, win, all the way down. So there's, you know, there's only one way you can win in 4 games. There's 4 ways you can win in 5 games. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 ways you can win in 6 games. And then there's more ways you can win in 7 games. I don't feel like counting it on the air here. But I went through that, and then I multiplied the various probabilities for all the ways you could do it, whether you're at home and on the road. And my model, now I can input an SRS difference, and it'll tell me what the chances of winning a series are. And based on the Cavs' current SRS difference from the Warriors are playing right now, so we don't have tonight's games in there. The Cavs have a 13.2% chance of winning a series if they don't have home court advantage, and of course they will not have home court advantage. For the Spurs, it's probably a little bit less. So against the Spurs, they would have an 11.7% chance. So anyway, I will post links to both of these things. Doing this work was sort of interesting for me, but the big finding is I thought the Cavs' chance would actually be significantly less than this. I thought that they would have like a 5% chance. I mean, the SRS difference between the Warriors and the Cavs is basically 5. And like if you were to, you know, so it like it, that's the same as the SRS difference between the Cavs and the Pistons, right? Like it's, I thought that there would be like no chance, but, you know, apparently there would be.
Yeah, 10 to 15 sounds about right.
Yeah. It's low. It's not great. I think this is sort of commensurate with 538's work with ELO, right? I don't know what...
Yeah, I think they had I checked yesterday and they had 10% for the Cavs, but that's overall, right? That's not just winning the finals. That's, getting to the finals and then
Right.
winning
Well,
the
yeah.
finals.
So in that case, that's their finals winning. That's the chance of them winning the finals, which is, say 15% times their chance of winning the first round, times their chance of winning the second round, times their chance
Right.
of winning the
We
third round.
and those are pretty high.
Those are all pretty high. So if anything, they're probably a little bit more bullish than I would be on the Cavs' chances, right? Because I would probably show, 90% chance of winning the first round and then sort of decreasing after that. So yeah, the overall for me would probably be like 6% or 7%. So anyway, chances are not great. But the
I have a
Cavs,
question.
yeah, go ahead.
So, how much of a difference would it make if we play Toronto with home court and without home court?
Yeah, okay. So let's see here. So our SRS is 5.48. The Raptors is 3.97. For the sake of this, I'm going to say we have a 1.5% difference in SRS. So with home court, we would have a 67% chance of winning, 67.00% chance of winning. Without home court, we would have a 57.3. So home court gives us a 10% increased win chance against the Raptors.
Yes, seems a little low, but makes sense, I guess. Cavs haven't been that consistent.
Yeah, I mean our SRS is sort of frustratingly low. It's only 1.5 better than the Raptors. Now you can make excuses for that, but the Raptors have had worse injury issues than us.
Yeah, they missed Lowry for a few games.
Right,
They missed
and like,
Valanciunas for a long time.
yeah,
And they
and
still don't have what's his
DeRozan didn't
face?
play for a while.
What's that guy from Atlanta?
Oh, Damari Carroll.
Jamari Carroll. They still don't have him. I don't think they're going to get him this season.
So yeah, I mean, you can make arguments that the Raptors' SRS is artificially deflated. I think you can make arguments that ours is. I mean, look, Kyrie Irving missed the first third of the season, and he's been sort of
His
just
shooting's been pretty
yeah.
bad.
Just to stop ourselves from getting sidetracked, let's say he's been sort of mediocre since he's come back. Yeah, ours is a little bit deflated. Also, the Cavs continue to insist to play Timofey Mozgov. Oh, that reminds me. Did you see the article from the Russian newspaper that that guy translated on Reddit?
Yeah, I did see that. Where I think he was saying that he feels better now than he has the entire year.
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of interesting things in that article. The first was I just sort of liked the, I don't know, just sort of the way that the guy who translated it sort of tried to put the stuff. I don't know, it felt like I was reading Russian, even though, the translation was in English. But yeah, so Mozgov said that, yeah, this knee injury took a lot more out of him than he thought it would, and that he's really only been feeling back at 100% for the last month or month and a half. And I thought that was interesting. Arnav, if you know this, I don't know if our listeners know this, I don't know if I've given this particular rant on this podcast, but yeah, I've been frustrated with our beat reporters for not asking either Kyrie or Timofey Mozgov how their knees are feeling. Like, it seems like basically irresponsible journalism. Like, they should be asking them every day, like, do you feel 100%? Like, are you getting better? What do you think? Do you feel weaker? But I haven't seen a single report on that all season. But in any case, we got it in this translation from a Russian article from Mozgov himself, which means he's plenty willing to talk about it. So I don't know. How does that? I have some feelings on that, but how does it make you feel that he says he's been sort of feeling good for the last month?
Yeah, I think it's great for him, right? Because he's coming up in a contract year. So if he can show some sort of momentum at the end of the season, because the Cavs keep insisting on playing him, and maybe some sort of positive play in the playoffs, then it's going to be great for him, whoever gives him the next contract. I don't think it's going to be the Cavs, but whoever it is, it's going to be a good thing for Mozgov. On the other hand, I still don't think the Cavs should continue to play him, just because even if he's improving now, there's just no time left to integrate him into the lineups anymore. I mean, he's been such a big negative for any lineup this season that I think time's just pretty much over now. I think
Yeah,
they
I
should
mean,
continue to play Tristan at center.
I'm looking at his March numbers just to get a feel for if he's been playing better. So his true shooting in March was better than any other month, 66, but also he was shooting a lot less. His plus minus was 5.0 in March, 5.7 in plus 5.0 in March, plus 5.7 in February, plus 5.4 in January. So if anything, it's gone down. I was hoping that I would see some sort of, marked improvement, but not really. His averages are the same. His rebounding is down. His points are up 0.4. I mean, he's the same.
Yeah, I don't think he's improved.
Well, I mean, I'm glad he feels that he's better.
Right. That's the
That's
first step, right? I mean, if he has
good.
the confidence, it'll help him a lot whenever he's on the floor. Because there were several times when he had the ball and there was nothing between him and the basket, and he wouldn't dunk it. He would lay it up.
That's
I think
true.
that was a clear sign of something being wrong with his knee.
Yeah, that is true. He has been dunking more lately. He had an awkward-looking dunk today, where like LeBron gave him he was standing like basically completely open because they like quintuple teamed LeBron, and LeBron passed it to him, and it like hit him in the stomach, and like he wasn't even expecting the ball. It hit him in the stomach, and he like fumbled it around for a second, but he was so open that he was still able to dunk it.
Was that the one where Love passed to LeBron and then he like did it around the person pass?
Yeah,
Yeah, I
that was
remember
the
that. That
one.
was a good
Yeah.
play.
It was a good play. It's just, yeah, Mozgov wasn't even ready for it even then. I don't know. I was much more bummed about Timofey Mozgov in the at the beginning of the season, and then like I've sl my disappointment in him has slowly dropped as like my expectations have changed. And
Yeah, I
yeah,
think
hopefully.
Tristan's done a pretty good job of replacing his productions.
Yeah, I mean, I know you'd like to talk about Tristan a little bit tonight, so let's do that. But yeah, and this is probably a good segue. But yeah, the Cavs are still starting Timo. He played. He played 21 minutes tonight. Tristan only played 17. But yeah, I'm okay with the Cavs conceptually playing Kyrie Irving, even though he's sort of a negative on the court right now. I think I'm done with Timofey Mozgov. The experiment of like trying to get Mozgov's confidence up. I would like to now have him come off the bench, or not at all, and stop messing around and start starting Tristan. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I agree completely. But what if their reasoning is that the reason they keep playing Mozgov is so that basically they can keep Tristan fresh for the playoffs? Because, he has to offensive rebound, which is a really, I mean, it takes a lot of energy out of him, right? So I would imagine keeping him fresh is paramount.
I like the theory that the Cavs are doing like a triple secret thing here, which is they are intentionally starting Mozgov, even though they know it's bad, just so that they can make sure that Tristan doesn't play too many minutes. I like that theory. I think that is wrong. I think the Cavs have other bizarro motivations that I don't quite understand, but one of them, I think, is that they think that Mozgov is not as bad as he actually is. And so my concern is that we're going to have to lose a couple games in the playoffs where Mozgov really lays an egg before they make the change. And yeah,
Yeah,
I mean,
wasn't there a game where they started
hopefully
Mike
we're
Miller?
in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think against the Bulls, the first game that they lost, they
Oh,
started Mike Miller.
that JR didn't because
Yeah, the
JR
Joe
was
didn't play,
suspended.
so they ended up starting Mike Miller. They lost by like 10 or something. And
Yeah.
then they finally realized, you know what? Let's just start Tristan.
Yeah, I don't like it when it takes the team longer to realize things than it takes me. But yeah, I mean, I hope that's not what's going on here, but I strongly suspect it is. But we'll find out soon. But on that note, yeah, I mean, you want to say some nice things about Tristan?
Yeah, so what do you think of his production so far this year? I mean, what improvements, just from your eye test, have you seen with him? Do you think his confidence is better? Do you think his rebounding is better? Do you think his free throw percentage is better or his defense better?
So,
Just from your eye test. Don't even look at the numbers.
I think he has completely embraced his role, which is the sort of junk guy who, gets offensive rebounds, hustles and dives for loose balls. I think he has gotten better at pick and roll defense. I think he was pretty good at it last year, but I think he's like continued to make that a strength in his game. And I just generally feel like his effort is always there. Like he doesn't seem to get like too down. And yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled that the Cavs have him for the next 4 seasons after this one.
Yeah, his true shooting percentage has actually increased by 0.21. Sorry, 0.021.
So 2.1%.
Yeah, 2.1%. So like from 58 to 61, which, might seem small, but
I know that's not small. That
yeah,
I
it's
mean,
pretty decent actually.
yeah, I mean, just for like the listener's sake, wow, I'm just looking at it now. So his career true shooting percentage has gone up every single year he's been in the NBA. So 46.9 his rookie year, then 51.6, then 52.8, then 58.0, then 61.1 this season.
Yeah.
That it is a reason for like extreme encouragement.
Yeah, he's also finishing better near the basket. So it's 67% now near the basket. He has a little bit of a hook shot now. So that's 42% from three to ten range. It's not ideal, but it's much better than the 35% last year. And then his free throws have probably gotten a little worse, but it's been much better recently. Yeah, it's 62% as opposed to 64 last year. But he's been shooting 70% since the All-Star break, so
Yeah,
some reason.
hopefully that's the new normal.
Yeah, hopefully that's a new normal. He's much better on pick and roll defense. He has the highest offensive rating in the NBA. So just for the listeners, what that means is he basically gives the Cavs the most points per possession in the NBA.
That's well,
And
hold
a
on,
lot of
hold
that
on,
is
hold on, hold
because
on,
he
hold on. That's not exactly what it is. It means that while he is on the court, the Cavs score. Well, while he's on the court, the Cavs score 130 points per 100
No,
possessions.
I think you so the Basketball Reference doesn't calculate offensive rating the same way as we think about it. It
Ah,
actually
okay.
looks at the number of points you produce per whatever possessions.
Okay.
It doesn't have to do with the team. This is an individual stat.
Okay. Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so it's 130 points. So assuming he had 100 possessions in a row, which obviously
Right.
he would in a game, he would score 130 points, or he would add 130 points to the team.
That's spectacular.
Yeah, a lot of that is because he creates offensive rebounds, which essentially creates a reset, so it doesn't count as a possession in this stat
Right.
at least,
Right.
which makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's an idiosyncrasy of the stat, but it also is a stat that almost perfectly sort of encapsulates what Tristan Thompson's like main primary skill is.
On offenses, right?
Yeah, I
Exactly.
mean, it's keeping possessions alive.
So if he could double this production, obviously he's not going to do that. He would basically be Steph Curry.
Right, yeah.
Like if he could double his usage at the same efficiency, he would be
Right.
Steph Curry.
Right. I
Not going
mean,
to happen
so would
ever.
DeAndre Jordan, but yeah.
Exactly. I'm just saying
But
that he's providing similar levels of efficiency, but at a much lower usage rate.
right. And he's only 25, so I think he's
24.
probably got
Or is he, did he turn 25
no, he
recently?
turned 25 on March 13th, so he's
Okay.
25 years, 23 days old. But yeah, like I anticipate him getting sort of I think on a low end, I think he's going to get I'm just making this number up, but I think he's going to get like 15% better than he is now. And I think there's upside for him to get I think he could be sort of like a marginal all-star. I think that's his upside.
Yeah, I could see that.
And,
I mean, if Roy Hibbert was an all-star a few years ago, I
right. I mean,
think
Zydrunas
Tristan would be.
Ilgauskas was an all-star.
Yeah, Mo Williams was an all-star.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, we're saying some heretical things here, but, implying that those were not totally deserved.
I
But
think
yeah, I
they were,
mean,
but it's just.
they were contextually, they were.
Yeah, they were contextually, exactly. And
But
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
another good thing is he doesn't miss any games, so he doesn't really get injured. Which, injuries can hamper development so much. I mean, as you can see with Kyrie, basically this entire year he hasn't been like himself as he hasn't been shooting like himself.
Right. Yeah, by not being injured, it sort of allows him to constantly practice. One of my concerns about Thompson and his contract dispute last offseason, and as we've promised, we will do a podcast on that, but still not this one on the Thompson contract. But I was worried that while that was going on, he wasn't sort of practicing as much as he might be if he had a contract. But that I definitely won't have that worry this offseason. And yeah, I mean, hopefully, look, maybe LeBron can have him move into his pool house or something. And they can just spend the entire offseason practicing together. That would be great. But yeah, I think he's going to get better. And I think the Cavs are going to be very pleased with this contract.
Yeah, his win shares per 48 has increased every single year he's been in the league. His box plus minus is finally a positive number now.
Yep.
And his turnover percentage is the lowest it's ever been of his career.
Yeah, look at that.
Because so one thing he used to do last season, if you remember, like he would get the offensive rebound, try to go up, and then lose the ball.
Yes, my girlfriend calls that the Tristan Thompson special. Yeah, it was infuriating. Like, yeah, he would get like six offensive rebounds a game, but three of them he would immediately get blocked on the second shot attempt. But yeah, he has really cut that down this year.
Yeah,
So it's not.
he's very good at reading now. So he knows when he can finish near the basket, and then
Yes.
he knows when he needs to pass out
He's
to the
better at
3-point.
passing out too. It used to be that like if he wasn't getting blocked on trying to put it back up, like he would pass it out. But you know, it's tough passing out of offensive rebound situations because there's like, you know, four people down there all hacking at you. But he's gotten a lot better at that difficult skill this season.
Yeah, no, I think I've been very impressed by him.
Yeah.
His
He's just
defensive rebounding percentage has increased. It's the highest of his career now. It's 23.3%. For reference, last year it was 19.7. So on the de defensive rebounding and on the defensive end, his rebounding has improved by 3.6%. That's pretty good.
I wonder if that has to do with playing fewer minutes with Timo or with Timo getting worse or
I can see
something
that being a
around
reason, yes.
that.
I can see that being a reason. Possibly, yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, even Love's has increased, so I think it could be because Timo's getting less minutes.
Right. And the minutes that he is playing, less rebounds.
Right.
So yeah, you have any other things you want to contribute to the Tristan Thompson Love Fest?
No. No, I think he's going to be a very important piece in the playoffs, especially.
Yeah, I mean, I am excited because I mean, yeah, I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, but yeah, it is my sincere hope that the Cavs start Tristan Thompson as soon as possible, but ideally by the time the conference finals or the NBA finals roll around, you know, God willing, we make it. And so there's yeah, I have some hope that by starting Thompson and benching Timo, or you know, sort of playing Tristan more minutes, I think that that makes our SRS higher. I think that makes us a significantly better team than the team that we've actually been fielding on the court this year. And so, yeah, I mean, that's sort of like a reason for optimism. Like, if we could boost, like, let's say, just for the sake of argument, okay, so the difference in our SRS between us and the Warriors is like 4.7. If that gap was just, let's say, four, that boosts our odds of winning like 3.5%. And, you know, that's a lot when you're, yeah, you know, when you're going from like 12% to 15.5% or whatever it is, like that's, yeah, it's like a major difference. And so,
Yeah,
yeah,
I
I'm
agree.
excited about Tristan and I'm excited about him playing more.
Yeah, one thing though, like the Hawks were overmatched last year in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
And one of the main reasons for that was our rebounding. Like even without Love, Tristan was really, really good at rebounding. I remember like s several games from him in a row where he was like, I don't know, 16 points and like 17 rebounds or something.
Right.
And then six of those would be offensive rebounds.
A couple of those games were like not sure things in the fourth quarter, and yeah, Tristan would just get like, you know, two or three offensive rebounds, and like, yeah, it just takes the heart out of the other team. It's not just that you get another possession, it's that like the other team
So deflating.
gets so bummed. Yeah.
I remember reading comments on Reddit, especially after the Celtics series, and they kept saying, I mean, watching Tristan get those fourth quarter rebounds was just so deflating for
Yeah.
the fans as well.
Right. Yeah, it's just, yeah, you feel helpless, right? You do everything right. Like you force the other team into a bad shot and then
This guy just swoops in and then gets.
you can't seal out Tristan. Also, to my eye, I don't know if this is actually true. It seems like he's fouling less this year. I remember him getting into foul trouble a few times last year, and you know, part of it is that his minutes, he doesn't really play enough minutes to get into reliable foul trouble, but I
Seems
don't
about
know.
the same. So I looked at it. So per
Yeah,
100 possessions, he was at 4.5 last year, 4.6 this year. So
I'm
about the
look, I'm
same.
look, I'm looking at the same thing. Yeah, all right. Well, this is one of those things where, like, anecdotally, I think something that's completely wrong. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm ready to wrap it up. You have anything else you want to say?
No, I think that was it. That was good.
Okay. Cool. All right. So this has been episode 14 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and thanks for listening.